This podcast is part of the Gun Rights Radio Network, podcasting freedom.
Hi, folks. This is Bob Main with the Handgun World Show. Why do I carry a gun? Because I can't carry a cop. Thanks for tuning in to episode number 159, where this is a practical firearms podcast. Where I'm not real technical, I just get into practical common sense, owning, shooting, and being proficient with primarily handguns. This is kind of a short show. This is really going to be a follow-up to the last podcast that I did, episode number 57, because when I finished that up, I didn't say much about the carjacking subject that a listener emailed me and opened it up, and I talked about it a little bit, but this is going to be a follow-up. I want to talk a little bit about carjacking because this subject has come up, and people have asked about it. Actually, I've been asked about this more than once. Now, I'm no expert, you know. I got to tell you. I'm no firearms training combat specialist or anything like that. I'm just going to give you my own thoughts here, and I have an excellent soundbite that I want you to listen to as well. But there's an excellent website out there called NoNonsenseSelfDefense.com. They talk a lot about defending yourself with a firearm. I'm a huge believer, and I really like what they have to say. NoNonsenseSelfDefense.com. It seems to me like the main theme of Mark McYoung's website over there is trying to avoid conflicts. But as you know, sometimes trouble will find you. You might not be looking for trouble, but it finds you. So it begs the question, should you use your handgun if you're being carjacked? If you remember in the previous episode, I talk about that I keep my gun in my vehicle with me. And, you know, it goes with me when I leave my vehicle, but it stays in my vehicle in a holster between the console and the seat, ready to use if I need it. But I'm going to be very choosy about how I use it. So you be the judge. I'm going to lay out both sides of the argument, whether you should use it or whether you shouldn't, and how should you use it to fight off a carjacker. I'm just going to go ahead and lay it out. You decide what's best for you. Take the best and leave the rest. So before I get into that, just a couple of quick announcements. I don't make this show real commercial, but I got to get a couple of things in there. Folks, if you haven't checked me out over at the Gun Rights Radio Network forum, I've got a couple of good threads going on. If you want to interact with me, ask me questions. That's probably the best way, although I love the emails. Keep the emails coming of show suggestions. I know some of you might not want to make your comments public, so sending me a private email is always a good thing. I enjoy those. Keep them coming. The website is handgunworld.com. In the next episode, I'm going to announce a surprise that I've got coming. Everybody who listens to this show is going to have a very real possibility of winning something. So stay tuned for that. In a few days, I'm going to go ahead and post that. It's a really cool surprise. It's a second part of the Handgun World Show that I am creating, and it's going to be specially for members only, and it's going to be a really cool opportunity. I'm going to go ahead and I built your suspense about it, hopefully right now, and I'll let you listen, tune in on to the next episode for the details on that. Also, please check out my YouTube channel. Just search Handgun World Show on YouTube, and you'll pull up my channel and all the videos associated with it. Throw some comments on there. We can interact that way as well. And also, the last thing I want to say, please remember to support the Handgun World Show. It's not my full-time job. It's just a hobby of mine. It's something that I enjoy doing, and I have fun talking about my favorite thing to do. But you know what? There are some expenses every once in a while, so if you can support it, some of you already have, great. If not, I understand that too. You know, these podcasts will always be free, and by you listening, you're just giving me a chance to have a heck of a good time. But if you can support it, if it's in your heart to do that, that'd be great. That's all I'm going to say about that. And that pretty much concludes the announcements. So let's dive right into the main topic. And that would be what to do if you are carjacked. First of all, if I can borrow some stuff from No Nonsense Self-Defense, I'm going to paraphrase a lot of what they say into my own words and my own experience, but you know, they just talk about overall self-defense in one of their posts about carjacking, and they mention stuff like your normal defenses are simply not enough. In other words, words and anger or outrage, that's not sufficient to protect yourself against someone that's committed to violence. Someone comes up to your car and they've got a gun drawn on you and they're poking a gun right outside your window in your face and they're committed to using it. Your normal defenses that you know, your fight or flight defenses are probably just simply not going to be enough. It's nearly impossible for the average citizen to effectively defend himself or herself when you're confronted with a real wild maniac and you're confronted in such an unexpected manner like that. So to make that transition instantly from thinking about, you know, what you've been doing that day or how you're going to schedule the rest of the day or what you're going to have, you know, for dinner or a kid's activity that you may have going on, to transition from that kind of thinking to the savagery that's necessary to overcome an armed opponent, that's tough to do, folks. That's real tough to do. That's even beyond the skill level of most highly trained martial artists. And by the time you can muster enough moxie and enough outrage to effectively defend yourself, the carjacker could have already pulled the trigger more than once. So it's a very, very serious situation. Now, there's some people that believe that you need to kind of throw him off a little bit. You need to do something and know some kind of an automatic reflexive response technique to throw off your attacker, to distract him, you know, somehow. And, you know, that's a decent school of thought. Now, I'm sure there's some people that think, you know, Bob, that's a dumb thing to do. And some of you out there who are trainers that have some expertise in this, please comment. I want to hear what you have to say. So I'm going to go, like I said, I'm going to present both sides, both schools of thought to you and let you make the decision. But a couple things I want you to remember, and that carjackers seldom operate alone. The guy that's sticking a gun in your face right outside your window or somebody that traps you as you're trying to get into your car, you know, pointing a gun at you is probably not the only one involved in this type of crime. You may only see the guy who's sticking a gun in your face, but the chances are that there's a lot more of them around. He's brought buddies. Car thieves in general, and carjackers especially, operate in groups. And oftentimes what happens is the driver will stop, let one of the members, usually a gang member, out of their car and wait until the vehicle has been stolen. Then they will caravan to a drop-off point, and the thief will rejoin his comrades and his buddies at arms. And when they do this, when they work in this manner, a group of thieves can steal many cars in one night if they want to, and then split this big pot of several thousand dollars or whatever it is that they're able to make off with by robbing you. All right, and on no-nonsense self-defense, they mentioned that if something goes wrong with the carjacking attempt, for example, you miraculously somehow, you pull off a miracle and you defeat the carjacker in a blaze of kung fu glory, and you do that without managing to get shot, there's a very good chance that the cronies that are with this guy are going to open fire on you. And unlike the guy that approached you in your car, his cronies, his buddies with him, are not going to be close enough for you to karate chop him with whatever kind of cool martial arts move that you might know. And no matter how good you think you are, folks, you're not going to be close enough to be able to use that stuff. I mean, you know, my son is studying mixed martial arts. He's 12 years old. He's a red belt in mixed martial arts. The school he goes to assigns belt categories. He's close. He's close to, probably a year and a half from now, he'll be a black belt. And, you know, one of his goals is to be an MMA fighter. As a hobby, I don't think mom and dad are going to let him be an MMA fighter as a profession. I don't think so. But, man, I tell you what, he's learning some good skills. But even his instructor, who's very well accomplished, and I very much respect this guy, you know, even he says, no matter how well trained you are in martial arts and so forth, you know, obviously you have two things going against you. Number one, if people are just not that close to you, you're not going to be able to use your well-trained skills. And number two, if you're outnumbered, eventually they're just going to be able to overpower you. Simple as that. You know, especially in this case, in a carjacking, if you happen to be trapped between two parked cars. Okay? The same problem applies to any firearm defense that you might muster up. You could obviously, unfortunately, easily find yourself in a firefight after shooting your primary attacker. So think about that. Now, some may say, boy, Bob, you're really describing the necessity to have a high-capacity weapon. Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, you know, I guess maybe here's where a six-shot revolver, if you're facing numerous people, could be a disadvantage. I don't know. I mean, yeah, I guess logically makes a little bit of sense there. But keep in mind, these are also situations where you're going to be responsible for where your bullets go and any rounds that you might fire as the carjacker flees and the accomplices that are with him flee as well. So keep that in mind. And this kind of a situation is a stark reminder of the very, very difficult decision that we have to make as to whether we're going to use deadly force or not. One of the things that I'm looking forward to is taking some more, a little bit later this year, taking some more combat training courses. I wanted to take one this month, but some personal issues came up and some things with my son concerning his martial arts and a few other things. That won the day, that took precedence, and I had to reschedule some of those, and I wasn't able to take the point shooting class that I wanted to take this month. But I've got it in my budget, and I've also got it in my goal list. To take two firearms courses, combat courses, real courses, not IDPA, not IPSC, USPSA, or anything like that, but real courses. I want to take them this year and be done with them. And you can bet I'll be making podcasts out of them and share with you who are listening what I've learned and what I've gained from those. Now, before I play the soundbite that I want to share with you, I want to mention something else, that if you do have a gun on you and you're carjacked, if you're in a vehicle and you're armed, think about something. As long as the vehicle that you're in is still mobile and you've got some running room, okay, I would submit to you that your car is your primary weapon first. Okay? Now, if you're not in the car, or the car is disabled, or it's blocked and it can't move, and you've got no running room, or you don't have any time to get the key into the ignition or anything like that, then your handgun, becomes an option, or your primary option. Now, I want to play an example of what I'm talking about, if your handgun becomes your primary option in fending off a carjacker. Now, this soundbite is going to be informative, but it's really not going to do justice. You need to watch this video as well. So in the show notes, I'm going to put a link to this video. I happen to think it's very well done. I'd be interested to hear what your comments are. As you know, I'm always an open-minded guy. Your mind's like a parachute. It works best when it's open, and mine's open. But listen to this, because even though this is an audio podcast, you can gain a lot from just listening to this, and then after you listen to it, when this podcast is over, first chance you get, go to the video and watch it. There'll be a link posted in it, and I think I'm also going to post this on the Gun Rights Radio Network forums as well for you to take a look at. So here you go. Listen to this, and I'll be on with some comments when it's over.
Safe Arms, and today we're going to go to the Rocky Mountain shooting location here in beautiful Colorado, and we're going to do an advanced CCW self-defense drill, which I call the stop and go. If you're just getting into basic firearms operations and safety, this might not be for you. So this entire video is for informational purposes only. With that said, let's head out to the range.
Now, it's a fact of life that a lot of us drive vehicles. We spend a lot of our time in our cars, either going to and from work, or even some of us might even spend the majority of our time on the road. But have you ever considered what you would do if you were confronted or assaulted while you're in your vehicle and how you would respond in a self-defense scenario? Well, that's what we're going to look at today, on how you can defend yourself with a firearm safely while you're in your vehicle. Now, it is an advanced drill, and there is some risk, so this is for informational purposes only. So let's go ahead and begin. Now, the first thing that we're going to do is we're going to need an assailant. In other words, a bad guy. Somebody who's unstable, violent, and wants to do us bodily harm. And that's this person right here. So now we've got our threat, the bad guy He's got a gun, and he wants to do us harm. So how are we going to respond? Well, if you remember, we talked about the inside the waistband holster. Well, what we're going to do is run through a simple drill, and I'll show you the steps. The first thing that we want to do is remain calm. We don't want to lose our cool, and we don't want to blow up or escalate the situation. If we can, we want to drive away or do whatever best to get us into a safe zone and away from the threat. Now, that might not be possible, and that's where self-defense comes in. Remain calm. But let's say that the threat is threatening you with a gun or a knife. He says he's going to kill you, and he wants your wallet. Well, you kind of got this feeling that you have to defend yourself and your family. So what you want to do is be compliant. Now, what you might want to do is say something like this. Okay, whatever you want, I'll get it. You can have my wallet. I'm just let me get my wallet. And then what you want to do is have this hand up to distract him so the threat is looking at this hand. You take your firing hand, or your right hand in my case, and I would reach down to my inside the waistband holster where I would draw my firearm. Then as I turn a little bit, that will distract the threat. As I draw my firearm, then what I'm going to do is put my hand up, thrust out the pistol in the direction of the threat, fire off a few rounds, and then I'm going to go on my merry way. That's basically the steps that we're going to use in this scenario. So let's run through this at a regular speed with live ammo. You pull up to the stop sign. The threat approaches your vehicle from the driver's side, says that he's going to kill you and that you need to give him your wallet. You know that you're in danger, you remain calm, and you comply. Okay, I'll get you my wallet. No problem, you can have all the cash, you can have everything. And you're going to fire off a few rounds, and then you're going to be good to go. That's how it looks in real speed. Let's do that again. Stoplight. The threat's going to approach you, and he's going to threaten you with your life, and he says that he wants your vehicle or your wallet or your family. So you know that you have to defend yourself. Whoa, okay. You can have my wallet. You can have everything. Let me get it. Just... And then you're going to drive on your merry way. So that's the drill that you need to practice if you're considering or doing a lot of driving. So let's look at it from another angle. Sure, okay, just hold on, I'll give you my wallet, all my money, no problem. Put three rounds into the target, let's do it one more time. Okay, you can have the wallet, you can have the cash, everything, let me get it, hold on. And that's how you defend yourself in a vehicle. So let's take a look at this perspective. Again, you're driving, you stop, the threat approaches you, and says that he's going to kill you and he wants your money and he's going to hurt your family. You realize that you have to remain calm and compliant, and here's what you're going to do. Okay. You can have my wallet. You can have it. Let me get it. Get it. And that's how you're going to put down the threat. Okay. You can have my wallet. You can have my wallet. You can have it. All of it. Now you might be asking, how do you draw your firearm from the inside the waistband holster? Well, what I'll do is I'll run through it step by step. It takes some practice, but again, the defense of you and your family and your loved ones is worth it. Here's what we're going to do. As we take this arm, our left arm, and put it up to distract the threat, we're going to turn our body to shield the weapon as we pull the shirt up, draw the firearm, and then punch it out in the direction of the threat. So let's run through it with real ammo. Again, you're going to remain calm and compliant. You're going to turn and rotate your body. Keep your left hand up. At the same time, your right hand's going to reach down below your shirt. You're going to clear the weapon from the holster. You're going to turn it and point it out towards the target, past your arm, and fire. It's that simple. Now, what happens if you have a seatbelt on? Well, it's simple. The same steps apply. It's going to take a little bit more practice, and you might have to do some adjusting while you're sitting in your vehicle beforehand, but once you practice, you can get this down pat. So again, you pull up to the stoplight, the threat approaches you from the driver's side. As you comply, you're going to take your left hand up to distract him, turn your body to pretend you're getting your wallet, you're going to grasp the firearm, clear it from the holster, turn, then you're going to punch it out towards the target, past your arm, and you're going to fire off a few rounds. Okay, you can have my wallet, you can have it, let me get it here. So even though you've got a seatbelt on, if you practice this technique, you can become proficient at something as advanced as firing from a seated position in a vehicle with a seatbelt and engage a threat effectively. So there you have it. That's how you can defend yourself inside your vehicle using an inside-the-waistband concealed carry holster. Like I said, that's another reason why I like carrying the IWB and my personal firearm above my right pocket. It just gives me a lot of different options. Now, if we look at the target, you can see that all the rounds hit our threat. So what you got to remember is this isn't a precision shoot where you have to draw, get a good sight picture, and engage your threat. What you want to do is basically that you're going to draw your firearm, point, and shoot in the direction of your threat. It doesn't take a lot, and especially when your threat is so close to you, it's easy to hit, and there's not a lot of misses. Matter of fact, I didn't miss any. And that comes with proper practice and safe handling of the firearm. So anyway, okay, you can have my wallet. Hold on, let me get it. You can have all the money. You might be thinking, well, you know, the stop-and-go practice drill is just a little bit too much for me. It's more than I can chew right now, and I'm just working on the basics of firearm safety. Well, there is a way that you can practice the Safe-Arm stop-and-go and do it safely. And what we're going to use is our airsoft. So here's the equipment that we're going to use to practice the Safe-Arm stop-and-go self-defense technique. We have an airsoft pistol, an inside-the-waistband holster, some ammunition, some propane, some silicone oil, some eye protection, and we're good to go. So let's run through the scenario using an airsoft pistol. Again, we're driving, we come to a stoplight or a stop sign, and we stop. Then the threat approaches us from the driver's side door. He threatens to do bodily harm to us and our family. He's armed and he's dangerous, and this is the last resort that you have to defend yourself and your family. So what you're going to do is put your hands in a defensive position to put the threat at ease. You're going to remain calm and comply with his commands. Yes, yes, you can have my wallet. You can have everything. Let me get it. Hold on. And as you turn, you're going to grip your firearm, clear it from the holster, turn, and then you're going to punch it towards the direction of the threat. Then you're going to lay off a few rounds. After you do that, it's time to move on. So let's run through that one more time. He wants your wallet. Whoa, 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 okay, okay, you can have my wallet, you can have my wallet, let me get it. It's as simple as that. So anyway, I hope this shows you how you can practice using airsoft pistols with advanced self-defense and offensive techniques to protect you and your family. Anyway. Okay, okay, you can have my wallet. Hold on, let me get it. Whoa, 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 okay, okay, you can have my wallet. Let me get it. You can have it all. That's it for today. Take care. God bless. Peace.
New York Mayor Michael Bloomberg is bloviating about gun shows, blaming these congenial get-togethers as a source of violence in his city. Bloomberg evidently hasn't listened to the Bureau of Justice Statistics, which reports that less than 1% of guns used in crimes were bought at a gun show. Bloomberg might want to listen to the Anti-Gun Center to Prevent Handgun Violence, which surveyed large police departments and learned that less than 5% of cop shops felt that gun shows were a problem. Better yet, Bloomberg should put a chain on his local thugs and leave out-of-state gun shows alone. Arm yourself with facts to strip the gun control industry bare. Visit gunfacts.info and get your free copy of Gun Facts. Called Indispensable by Cam Edwards of NRA News, Gun Facts is your rapid reference guide to debunking gun control myths and shaming politicians into obedience. www.gunfacts.info.
Okay, the next subject I want to cover is about carrying ammunition in your car. There's a subject that comes up often a lot, and that is how much ammo should you have in your car. Everybody seems to have, you know, a difference of opinion on that. I'll tell you what I do. when I'm on the road as I am now, and by the way, I'll be at my destination here in about 6 or 7 minutes, according to my GPS, so I'm going to keep this segment rather short. But I have one extra full magazine. So I got my Glock 19 with 16 rounds in it, and then I got a 15-round magazine. So I got 31 rounds of ammo with me. I think that's reasonable. Folks, I sure as heck hope I don't find myself in a situation where I'm going to need more than 31 rounds of ammo. Right now, as I'm dictating this podcast, I do not have an extra magazine on my belt. So I'm reduced to my Glock with 16 rounds of 9mm. And by the way, folks, now I'm using the Winchester 147 grain SXT. Starting to like this stuff. So I feel pretty good with 31 rounds. If you keep a revolver on you, yeah, I definitely think you need to have extra ammo, and you need to have speed loaders or whatever you use. You guys can tell I'm kind of ignorant about revolvers. So you need to have a way to quickly reload, because, folks, like I mentioned, six shots may not be enough, especially if you have multiple attackers. Okay, now, I also have ammunition in another place that's not quite so readily available, but I'll tell you where it is and I'll tell you why I carry it. I keep a 24 to 48 hour emergency bag in my vehicle at all times, both vehicles. I've got a small backpack stuffed with stuff I need, stuff that'll keep me sustained for 24 to 48 hours. I suggest that everybody do this. This right here is not completely about guns, but it's also about survival. And as you know, I like to look at things from a survival standpoint. I have extra food, extra water, extra clothes, a few tools, some fire starting equipment, some batteries, some flashlights, some light sticks, waterproof matches. I got a couple of devices called blast matches that I can use for starting fires and things like that. Food for 24 hours. Not quite 24 hours worth of water, but I've got water purification tablets, so in case I need to scrounge for water and it might not be clean, I can purify it. Again, I keep stuff that could keep me going for 24 hours. In my vehicle emergency bag, I've also got an extra box of ammo. And I've also got 10 shotgun shells. Okay, the extra box of ammo is there for obvious reasons. It's not within reach right away, but if there is some kind of a lull in the fight, or, you know, if there's a chance where I can have the opportunity to reload, or I've got some amount of time, I want to have that ammunition there. Also, if for some reason I'm mobile, I'm in my vehicle, and for some strange reason, I find myself in some kind of a confrontation that I think is going to be a prolonged confrontation, at least I've got an extra 50 rounds of ammo. The 10 shotgun shells are there in case it's a planned evacuation, and I know I'm going somewhere, and I may not be coming back for a while. My 12-gauge is coming with me in the car as well. So I've got extra shotgun shells. Maybe I need to have a little bit more than 10 extra. You know, maybe I need to have 30 or 40 extra. So actually doing this podcast is reminding me maybe I need to throw a few more in my 24-hour emergency bag. But, you know, folks, they listen to this podcast. I really strongly suggest, you know, if you're traveling around, if you do a lot of traveling like I do, or you do a lot of commuting, and you don't have a travel emergency bag, make yourself one and keep extra ammo in there as well. So right now, as I'm doing this podcast, like I said, I've got the extra 15 rounds in an extra magazine and the 50 rounds in my emergency bag. That's 65 rounds beyond what I have in my pistol already. I think that's going to get me through 24 to 48 hours, don't you? it might get me through a whole lot more than that. But anyway, that's my thoughts on extra ammunition. Okay, I said this was going to be a short show, and I meant it. Again, it's really a follow-up to the previous podcast. So to all of you who are listening, thanks very much. I hope that you have gained some information here about carjacking and keeping your car in your vehicle and stuff like that. This is kind of a subjective argument here, as a lot of people have a lot of different opinions. So I'd like to hear it. Maybe I'll make another podcast out of this based on some of the feedback that I get from you. But for now, My name is Bob Main, and thanks for listening to another episode of the Handgun World Show. The reason I carry a gun is because I can't carry a cop. Thanks for tuning in, folks. Catch you next time. Goodbye.